Elizabeth Lipari has been thinking about what it means to listen, and her recent study opens with a dramatic story. She writes, midway through Bowling for Columbine, a 2002 documentary about gun violence in the United States, filmmaker Michael Moore explores the influence that heavy metal music might exert on teenagers. Does it make them violent? The film shows an intense musical performance by shock rocker Marilyn Manson, who screams into the mic wearing black and white face paint, black lipstick, and an overall ghoulish look. Clearly, if any music ever had the power to turn kids to violence, this would be it. We are nobodies. Backstage, after the performance, Moore interviews Manson, who sits serenely, legs crossed. Moore asks Manson his thoughts about the Colorado teens who shot dozens and killed 15 people, including themselves, in 1999. If you were to talk directly to the kids at Columbine or the people in that community, what would you say to them? Manson reflects for a moment or two and then responds in a quiet voice, I wouldn't say a single word to them. I would listen to what they have to say. And that's what no one did. Lipari contends this insight, powerful and obvious as it may be, rarely makes an appearance in most of our daily public and private conversations. In fact, there are few places today where listening enjoys the same emphasis and value as speaking. Certainly, we understand that listening, as the inevitable counterpart to speaking, is central to human experience. But the matter seems to end there. Most of us think of listening as a relatively straightforward process in which we either accurately or inaccurately receive and decode information sent to us from a speaker. That from the study, Listening, Thinking, Being by Elizabeth Lipari. And those are three very important words to Christopher Phillips, who learned so much from his Greek grandmother Calliope, his Yaya. Calliope took her grandson deeply into his Greek heritage, as far back as the ancient philosophers, the pre-Socratics. And he says her heart and soul, though, was with Socrates. After much living and learning over the years, Christopher Phillips founded what he called the Socrates Cafe to bring thinking about the big questions of life out of the world of the university and into the lives of everyday people. And the key is listening. Here's what Christopher Phillips writes about the Socrates Cafe. My aim in large measure is always this. We simply must counteract the pervasive predisposition to think in black and white terms. We have to go back to thinking in nuance, to thinking in a dazzling array of colors in ways that lead us to continually reflect and to challenge ourselves, to explore the lapses and loopholes in any given way of seeing things, especially our own. There's a lot of preaching these days, but not even of the kind of introspection that can lead us to mordantly yet gently examine whether our own ideas and ideals are all they are cracked up to be. The ongoing Socrates Cafe gatherings, hundreds of them now the world over, I never dreamt it would become a global phenomenon, are places and spaces where listening to one another with all our being, with all our might and mind, where we use philosophical questions as the springboard and platform to further discover uncommon common ground and forge meaningful connections, even or especially with those with whom we don't see eye to eye. Words of Christopher Phillips, founder of the Socrates Cafe movement. As of 2025, there are hundreds of independent Socrates Cafe groups worldwide, coordinated by volunteers, relaxed gatherings where people from all kinds of backgrounds get together for discussion and the exchange of ideas. There's one listed at the Allentown Public Library and three here in northeastern Pennsylvania. We had a visit from three regulars at those northeastern Pennsylvania meetings: Steve Wallace, who facilitates the sessions in Mountaintop, Thomas Concannon, and George Mihalchik. And we begin with, appropriately, a question. What's in a name? Do we have to know anything about Plato, Socrates, dialogue, know thyself? Is it just window dressing? If we're curious, we might want to explore the history. We do or don't need to know those kinds of historical...
No, in fact, I think it's kind of an encumbrance myself, because it's a more of a matter of seeking how you feel about things and engaging with other people to kind of ask the questions out loud that maybe you wouldn't thought of, or you know, haven't thought to ask yourself. And so it's about exchanging. I think, in a way, studying philosophy can be an encumbrance on it, because you're engaged with how learned scholars have viewed the world. And that, if you're a bricklayer or a carpenter, might not have a whole lot to do with you.
But at the same time, it does form an edifice of our overall conversation. So like Steve was saying, it's an exchange of ideas. And we have our ideas, we have to listen to each other, and we can change our minds and discuss freely what we think about philosophical questions.
What I want to say about this is I don't think it's really necessary at all that you have any knowledge of who Plato was, who Socrates was. I think what you need is the ability to listen, because with these cafes, it's not supposed to be a one-on-one me talking to you. It's supposed to be me talking to the group. And the idea that I can express what I want to say, but I also have to be willing to listen to what other people say in response. And I think what lesson can be learned at these cafes is that in today's world, it seems like it's an I'm right, you are wrong, I have to destroy you, as opposed to what it used to be in my mind: I'm right, you're wrong, let's discuss this. And it may not reach an agreement, but you at least discuss it. And I think that's what is a real benefit to these cafes.
Isn't the key word that you started us off with, Steve, and you've each mentioned it, listen? We don't listen to each other, and that's just what you've described, George. So if there is a forum in which we are with people who respect us, may disagree with us, but if we listen, isn't this a model for the world at large?
But listening is a cultivated skill. Many times we think we listen. Possibly, I can't speak for anybody other than myself, of course. But I don't think that people have the skill of listening because of what's called buzzwords. Halfway through, I'll say something that triggers a thought in somebody else's head. And for the next, let's say, 20 seconds, an arbitrary number, they don't hear anything you say. They're thinking about what their response is going to be. At best, thinking about how they're going to destroy you, as George suggested, accurately. And so I don't know that just wanting to listen makes you a listener.
And I think part of Socrates also was, the reason why it's called Socrates is because it's an open question kind of dialogue in which you listen to the conversation going on, but then you can ask another question, the leading question that maybe answers somebody else's question, but at the same time opens the door for more conversation.
Tom triggers my downfall as an interlocutor or host over the cafes. I prefer to be a participant. But as the host, I need to listen to what's being said and try to extend the thoughts rather than caught up in the individual thoughts. Many times I've let the cafe down, my particular group, by engaging with the conversation rather than trying to extend it to greater lengths.
Well, give us an example of the range of questions that might come up in a session.
I encountered these just in the past day or so. And I make notes of them and put them on the board at the cafe. And the two I've encountered the past 2 days, is humanity a state of being or something that we must actively practice, something we have to do? And the other question, because it's New Year's, what's the best advice you received this past year or the best advice you've given?
With respect to that second question, what you have to understand when you come to these is that don't expect that there's going to be an answer at the end of the day, because it's not that. It's to discuss the topic, and not necessarily as a right answer or a wrong answer. There are just opinions. There are feelings. And if you want an answer to a question, I don't know that this is the place to come, because you're going to get as many opinions as there are people there.
Well, I'm going to skip ahead a bit. We have just celebrated New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, and that, of course, is a time when many people are making resolutions and often breaking them before the month is over. Is there a question here that you all might address?
You know, I think if next time we have Socrates Cafe, we can actually discuss, are resolutions really that important? Do we have to have
New Year's resolutions? Or how committed to them are you?
Yeah, I mean, and why do we always break them and so forth?
Or why do you only have to make them on January 1st?
Exactly.
The other thing that happens at these cafes is that you start out with one question, but sometimes it will blend into another question that's on the board.
All the time.
Without even seamlessly. And all of a sudden you realize you're talking about this question. And so I think it's just a wonderful experience for me.
George pointed out that our conversations stray. We're not nailed to the topic that's chosen, because the nature of the conversation is wherever it goes.
That's right. And the person who asks the question may interpret their question one way, but every other person in there will probably interpret it differently.
Yeah, that's part of the beauty of it, is you're under no obligation to ask the author of the question what he meant by it.
Right.
In fact, quite the opposite. It doesn't have anything to do with what he meant.
And sometimes it just hinges on a few words in the question.
Oh, how many times?
I think almost every time.
Well, just give us an example of how a session might go.
Say we have 6 participants tonight, and let's say each one has a question they want to put on the board. Ideally, the questions are anonymous, and they'll be put into a hat, for instance, and I will write them on a board. And then we have a round robin type voting. And so the first time around, if you like all 6 questions, you vote 6 times. And then the top vote getters eliminate the lesser ones. And so let's say we have 2 that got 5 votes. So then we ask you to vote 1 time, and we pick the question of the last 2. And then we engage in the conversation, starting with anybody who wants to go first, you know.
Taking your 2 sample questions, Steve, the first about humanity is one you could all talk about in general ways, but the one about advice, what's the best advice you've received this year? You could talk about that from your own life experience. There must be a balance in the questions themselves and the way you talk about them. George?
I don't know that it's necessarily a good thing all the time to bring your personal life into these discussions, but you are who you are, and that's what you base your opinions on. I have difficulty keeping that away from the discussion, but I try to at least do it as anonymously as possible.
And I think that's some of the foundation why this group is so, I guess, cohesive, because we do bring our personal information and our personal stories into it, right? And that just helps the conversation along, because somebody may pick something that George says or Steve says and go with that and maybe make that more general, perhaps.
I think it's good not to bring your personal life into it in a direct connotation, but to try to work it in as far as from an omniscient point of view, rather than
right.
expressing your personal involvement in it. You kind of want to remove yourself from the events of whatever we're talking about and try to see it as a third party.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's very important
to do. If you can't do that, then one of the libraries that we have these at, all three that we were talking about, Scranton, Mountaintop, and Wilkes-Barre, are all conducted in the library. And one of the librarians one time asked me, she saw a political question on the board. And she said, I thought it wasn't supposed to be about politics. And I said, the conversation and the questions go where they go. But we've never had a conflict over any kind of issue that would be political or religious in nature. Like the things you're told, don't talk about at work. We talk about all the time.
And as Steve knows, and we all know, religion, politics, these can be very divisive. But we really keep it to a kind of a concept object kind of discussion where if we don't agree with each other, it doesn't matter. We can still have a good discussion.
And in addition to listening, there's the learning part too. I mean, I can learn from someone who is maybe the complete opposite of who I am or what I believe, and at least get an understanding of maybe why that person believes that without it becoming contentious and argumentative. And that's to me the whole key. And if it does get that way, that's when the moderator has to step in and say, no, let's get back on track. This is the question, and we understand what you're saying, but let's not be, like I said, a one-on-one, but a group discussion.
It sounds to me like this is a very good forum for learning how to be good citizens. Don't we need to be able to do just what you all are explaining?
I think so.
I think that it would be fabulous if the libraries had one of these every night. There was enough people who wanted to come that they would have one like every night of the week. That there'd be enough citizen involvement and people pursuing civic identity that they would want to participate in something like this.
Perhaps if you want to enter into the political arena, it should be some type of mandatory requirement that you come to one of these or two of them.
Definitely.
And then go on your campaign trail.
And the first question you announced, Steve, the situation about humanity, that's one of those great questions. Overall, there isn't an answer to it, but we can wrestle with it. What do we have to say? So you get the whole scale then, right?
We really do. Almost every Socrates Cafe has questions that cover the entire scale. It could go from humanity, earth-shattering kind of questions about AI, or something just, hey, what's the best advice you've gotten?
Yeah, AI's been a big topic recently, but the thing about the humanity is just like being a productive citizen.
Now, Steve, I call you an artisan and an artist. You have all that background in the work you do for a living. Do the arts, does music ever come up, visual arts or anything like that, come up in the questions?
Sure. Often, especially art as a wide topic, you know, it gets tied up in things. I mean, a number of the first question I ever asked when I went to one was about the story of Frankenstein and about whether the creation was if it was living, does it have a soul? Who's responsible for that soul ultimately and stuff? That was 2008. But also the question has been asked before, what is art? How do we define art? And I don't know of any music questions we've had.
Not necessarily always applying to music, but one of the questions I always had, I don't know if it was ever discussed, is can you separate the artist from the person? And it's like, don't ever meet your hero. You know, if the artist that you love dearly has a personal issue, can you still respect that person as an artist and separate it from the person?
Now, see, if this were a part of Socrates Cafe, I would respond with, yes, you can, in my opinion, because as a scientist, I separate scientists from their science. Some scientists are not necessarily the best of people, the best of humans, but they have wonderful science that they've contributed a lot to the world. So in my mind, I'm able to do that. But is that something that we should pursue all the time? I think it's a valid question. See how we kind of feed on other questions.
Is there a line when something is so heinous that you can't?
Right, exactly. And where is that line?
Where is that line?
Right.
What comes to mind is Wagner. You know, we listen to Wagner,
yes,
and we know
like a lot.
Yeah. Ever since I've been going to the Socrates Cafe, which is less time than George and Steve have, but still longer than most of the other volunteers, I've really learned a lot. It's an enriching experience in the way that you listen to other people's viewpoints, like George was saying. You can learn from what other people have to say, and you kind of go home and you think, wow, that's interesting, and maybe I'll think about that further. And it's not always that way, but there are a lot of questions with open-ended answers that you really think, hey, this is interesting. I should read about this more often, you know, and maybe learn more so I can maybe change my mind.
And even if you do encounter someone who you disagree with, as George was describing, hopefully you're open-minded enough to understand the other person's point of view and embrace it and try to see that your opinion isn't the only significant one, and that politically and religiously now this becomes possibly an important factor in your personal life.
Right.
In your day-to-day life.
Exactly.
You know, and it makes you understand somebody else's dilemma, baby.
And this is what value is when we have random Socrates cafes are open to anyone in the community. We've had college students come by and talk about their youth-centered perspectives. We've had very, very senior citizens come in. I'm talking, what was that? He was 95 90s, or something, yeah. 90s.
There was a lady in Scranton who was 94.
Yeah, and these would come in and give us their life perspectives. It was fascinating to see all these different viewpoints.
The lady in Scranton who was in her mid-90s and came all the time in Scranton.
She was in her mid-90s 10 years ago.
But it was interesting to talk to her because so much of what she had seen, when was the first time you saw an automobile?
No, right.
When was the first time you used a telephone or saw an airplane? And the airplane she saw was a biplane. So communing with people that have experienced those kind of things, how do you put a value on that?
For her, it was also interesting to see how socially and social values from when she was a young woman changed to currently. And it gave you an idea, instead of just reading in a book about this is the way it was then, to actually speak to someone about how it was then.
One time, we had a gentleman who came by, and he was doing something in the library, and he dropped his daughter off because she wanted to hang out. And she was like 8 years old, 10 years old,
something like that, yeah.
And, of course, she wasn't able to discuss quantum physics, nor the finer points of Christianity or Islam. But she was a great contributor to the conversation, and I always wanted her to come back. And her father said he was going to try to see if he can get us into her school to conduct one. And I thought, I would love that.
It's amazing some of the questions the kids ask. And they could be as young as 8, and the college students would come in and ask questions that we might not ever ask ourselves.
It does seem like if you start this process early and you are in the habit of being disciplined, when those young people who live on their iPhones and their devices, if they have this background, you would think at least they'd have some way of resisting the quicksand of what you described so well, George.
Not only does it bring them into a discussion and listening mode, but they're doing it in a room with other human beings instead of just on a phone or
live
whatever.
Socialization.
And I think you'd agree that the phones are integral to our society. They're not going to go away. So you might as well try to tell the kids, you have a university in your pocket. You have an entire university library in your pocket. Maybe through something such as this, Socrates Cafe, we can teach you how to use it.
In fact, when the college students were there, I think we talked about questions like this, about how important phones were to them. Could they live without it? What do they think about the privacy online and so forth? And some of the answers are kind of shocking. Younger people don't necessarily think too much about the privacy issues, but some of them also realize that they're involved too much in their phones, and hence they used to come. I don't think we've had college students in a while, but it's very valuable to have them come and let them see what real social interaction is like. And I think they enjoy it. I really do.
Now, you mentioned that there are libraries, and there are three, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, and Mountaintop. Tell us where and when.
The second Thursday of every month, the one in Wilkes-Barre, the Osterhood, if I pronounce that right. Then the third Wednesday.
The third Wednesday of every month is at the Albright Library in Scranton.
And that would be Scott, who runs that one. And the one I conduct is in Mountaintop.
At the Marion Sutherland
Kirby Library, yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Kirby Library.
And that's the fourth Wednesday.
Fourth Wednesday of every month.
The one in Scranton is from 6 to 7:30.
Mine is from 6 to 8 in
right.
Mountaintop.
Because the library closes at 8.
Yes. And then the one in Wilkes-Barre starts at 5 or 5:30 because they close very early there. They close at 7:30. Oh, so they want us out before 7:15.
In fact, we used to start at 6:30, and then we decided that we needed more time. So we pushed it back to 6 o'clock. But that time, we use almost the entire time. We have to be pretty much kicked out of the library every single time.
Yeah, and again, if you decide to attend, Erica, there's no reason or obligation to bring a question with you. You can just come and participate. Tom will provide the question for us.
Steve usually has a base set of questions he comes with because as the MC, we really need to have a few starting questions. But most of the time I'll come with a question. George will have questions. Some of the regulars will have several questions. And some of the new people will just sometimes come and say, well, how about this? And have a question on the spot.
And we have a wide range of people who attend. We have retired teachers. We have professionals. We have a truck driver who comes. We recently had to release a member of our exquisite club. She had to return home to Brazil. And she was up here working in Luzerne County, below her station life, clearly. But she owns her own business in Brazil, and she was pursuing a doctorate up here in America. And her visa expired just before Christmas, around Thanksgiving.
Oh, Thanksgiving.
But just to show you the camaraderie that we created, all of us got together for a pizza and brought her a farewell cake. And she was delightful.
She got Steve a book as well. So
she bought me a book, too, as a going away gift.
And when she left, the average age of the group went way up again.
Yeah, she was in her late 20s at least.
How do you get the word out other than just little squibs in the newspapers, Community Digest? What do you do to promote yourselves?
We talk to people like Eric Funky. I mean, John in Wilkes-Barre is a big promoter of it. He gets flyers printed and leaves them all around. I've been fortunate at Mountaintop that rarely do we have less than five people.
Yeah.
It's not that I only want five. I've had 12 and 13 at times. But there's no funding to this. I mean, they just give us the space to do it, so there's no way to spend money on it. And probably better that way.
The library also puts little posters inside the library. And I go to the library at Mountaintop. It's only a couple miles from my house. And they always are on the ball with the posters. And I see it in the newspaper all the time as well.
It's online, too.
It's online. That's right. If you go to the library's webpage, it's online, each one of them. And for our parts, I mean, I try to spread it as much as I can by word of mouth. And I think that's sometimes effective.
People are wringing their hands and wondering what we can do in the current situation in our communities, in our country, in the world. And it sounds like something like this, as simple as it is in terms of you don't need any contraptions, you can just sit around a table, or if you have chairs, all you need is chairs and a roof over your head, and the desire to do what you're all doing and respect each other. If we had to write a prescription, an RX, this would be on the list.
I can't speak for all three of us here, but I think the reason we started coming was because of the RX factor. Just looking for an outlet, looking for an exchange, something to do during the week that's away from the norm, you know, rather than just spending your time doing whatever you do in the evenings.
All you have to do is bring your body and bring your mind and be willing to talk and listen.
Do you ever think that there are ways to build on this with taking it into a school and working with young people? Do you think in those terms about a larger vision for them, or is the Socrates Cafe session complete in of itself?
Well, you know, I go to the opera frequently in New York, and they have a program there where schools can come to the opera and sit in on the last dress rehearsal. So not only do they have the chance to see an opera, but also to see a little bit behind the scenes. And it's an extremely inexpensive thing. And that's something that I'm exploring with someone I think you know as well, to bring some children from this area into New York City to do that. I can sit down with this person and see if there's a way that we can bring a Socrates Cafe into a school. I'm not sure what the age group would be. I think they'd all be fascinating, whether it was elementary or junior high school or high school or college. I think you get different perspectives on each class. So I think it'd be a wonderful idea.
I would like to think that, I hope that it can be expansive. It would be delightful to know that we're reaching out beyond where we are now, you know.
Well, and I think, like George was saying, you know, it's the age group. We can have Socrates at young ages and college age, where I'm more likely to want a discussion going on. And I think that's something that we can definitely look into expanding. And I think that this is something that we could do in the near future, is try to expand this.
It would be extremely interesting to have in like those four age groups.
Yeah.
To have the same question and to see what came out of it.
And I would like to see that. I would hope that if you start something on the expansive idea that we have now, that we could possibly instill something that would carry on beyond, that this become part of their normal
identity.
Identity, yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
That this would be something like, you know, well, I have to do this now, you know, something that they would.
Someone who got so excited about it, they there are a couple of people that they started their own group.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, if we kind of get some of these younger folks, they could start their own Socrates Cafe from where they're from or wherever.
We just spoke with Steve Wallace, who facilitates the sessions in Mountaintop, Tom Concannon, and George Mihalchik, about the Socrates Cafe gatherings here in northeastern Pennsylvania. There are meetings at the Oosterhout Free Library the second Thursday of each month, and that's at 71 South Franklin Street, and those sessions get underway at 5:30. That's at the Oosterhout Library, second Thursday of the month, 5:30 in downtown Wilkes-Barre. The third Wednesday of the month, the Albright Memorial Library, 500 Vine Street in Scranton, hosts the Socrates Cafe, and that gets underway at 6 o'clock. And then the fourth Wednesday of the month, it is a meeting at the Marion Sutherland Kirby Library in Mountaintop, and that's hosted by Steve Wallace, and that gets underway at 6 o'clock. Everyone is welcome. There are no costs involved, and you can check the various library websites for more information. Socrates Cafe, it's the second Thursday of the month in Wilkes-Barre at the Oosterhout, the third Wednesday of the month at the Albright Memorial Library in Scranton, and the fourth Wednesday of the month in Mountaintop at the Marion Sutherland Kirby Library.